New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, yo, for grown-up!
Good morning, Radio for Grown-Ups. Joel Becker on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. 11 minutes past 9 o'clock. Last day of July. It's the 31st, 2018, although you'd never know it by the temperature outside. It's gorgeous waking up this morning. 68, our last recorded temperature at the Lawrence Municipal Airport. And although there is a slight chance of some sprinkles here and there, it should be probably the best day to go out to the Douglas County Fair or wherever you might be going today with a high around 85. We'll see some increasing temperatures over the next few days, 89 tomorrow, 93 Thursday, 93 Friday. But today should be extremely pleasant. There's a little fog here and there outside today. That should burn off pretty quickly. But nothing to complain about for the end of July. Radio for Grownups on a Tuesday. And I said earlier, and if you were listening to the Morning News Watch or According to the Record and you heard one of the promos, that this is, in fact, the week that we do have Dr. Wes Crenshaw come in, an every other week affair, and this is the week.
We're having an affair.
So we'll be talking with Dr. Wes here in just a second, but also coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, we've got Roger Steinbrock from the Lawrence Parks and Recreation Department, and then in the third hour, in the 11 o'clock hour, we've got our daily Heartland Memory from David Lewis. This time I picked a bit in your honor, Doc. It's called Village Idiot.
Thank you,
yeah,
Joel.
That was the only reason why I wanted to say that, just because it allowed me to say that.
Now, so, I thought this was Radio for Grownups.
It is.
What? Oh,
it's actually
a wrong show.
It's actually a story about one of the less fortunates, I guess, that was in his community when growing up. This is, of course, going back 65 years in central Illinois. And, you know, people were treated differently in those days in communities. Communities sort of took care of their less fortunate in a different way from the way we do now. And, in fact, that's kind of the topic that we were going to get on today. The news story that broke last week that really that caused us to look at this topic had to do with the Burt Nash Community Medical Health Center, and seven of their therapists all at once decided to move on from that location.
They did. Whoosh.
And,
out the door.
Yeah, and of course that of, you know, anytime you've got that many doctors just suddenly deciding to leave, that's going to raise some eyebrows from people. And of course there was a lot of questions as to what might have prompted them to want to do so, what the organization was going to do instead, what's going to happen to the patients. And more importantly, they were all specifically in a certain area of the hospital. They didn't, right. I mean, they weren't all identical or anything like that, but they all did a certain type of treatment, which is now going to have a bit of a hole in it. And it is, more importantly, for one of their one of the more difficult areas to find other therapists to fill the bill.
That would be my read on it. I think Burt Nash is proposing that there will be no hole and all shall have prizes. And I think that is concerning. The team of seven, some have been around for quite a few years. And that the reason I should kind of explain why this is important to me, I think there are different ways to look at different agencies in the community. I read a recent post on Burt Nash's website that proposed they wanted to become the provider of choice in the county. So I guess they perceive themselves as a competitor to the rest of us. We perceive ourselves as partners with them. We see ourselves as needing Burt Nash in our practice, and I think every other private practice in town would agree. Because it allows us to, and you know, these are a lot of things people don't think about, and yet they exist every day in our society. Burt Nash's existence allows us to feel a little safer taking clients that may be a little on the fringe of our scope of practice. So if we have someone we start to see and we realize they need what's referred to in our business as a higher level of care, we feel comfortable hitting the button to transfer them appropriately to Burt Nash. That gives us a safety valve and lets us see a broader range of clients. Without that, especially the program you were referring, which is the DBT, Dialectical Behavioral Therapy Program, without that, we would be more inclined to say, no, this person is outside our scope of practice. So then people get less service. And I can guarantee you in this town, a lot of services are provided by private providers like our office. So we need that. So the minute we start seeing worries in the community about this, we get scared even for our own business.
All right. So a couple of things. First of all, you seem to think that this was something that the community may have some opinions about. So anybody who wants to get involved today can certainly call in and give their opinion. 785-843-1321 is our number here, 843-1321, as we get on this topic. And of course, it's not just limited to Burt Nash, because we've got another mental health facility that is going to be on the ballot in November. As far as something we've talked about on more than one occasion, the fact that they feel like they need to get this made and so on, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But just to start, to make sure that our listeners do have the background they need to understand our discussion here, talk a little bit first of all on what exactly Burt Nash is as a community mental health center. You know, because people hear that, and if you're not familiar with the mental health facility, you could hear that and say, oh, it's a, you know, it's a mental institution, or it's somewhere right. where people get, you know, thrown when they're, you know, loopy or something like that. And just make sure everybody knows exactly what kind of patients they cater to, and that not everybody that goes there is, you know, stays there. I mean, in right. fact, most of their people are outpatient.
None do, because it's an outpatient facility. So this discussion, to do it justice, is about the next 7 hours of the show, which might grow old. But community,
I'll call Roger and tell him, you know. Yeah.
In general, community mental health centers have existed since pretty much the 60s, where there became an awareness that we needed to serve people with a variety, broad range of mental health concerns in the community. And those have evolved over the years. I think Burt Nash goes back something like 60 years, but all community mental health centers around the nation come kind of out of that same model. So they vary from county to county how they are structured, and it kind of matters in this discussion to understand the difference. In Sedgwick County, Wichita, and Johnson County, those are organs of county government. And so they actually are, you have the same health insurance as an employee of Johnson County as the police department does, or this, and the city commission oversees this, and there's a board, but they are actually an organ of county government. For all the other mental health centers in Kansas, including Burt Nash, they are private nonprofits. And one of the concerns about that that I foresee, and I give money to nonprofits, I work with nonprofits, I'm on the radio with nonprofits, and so I have a great affinity for them. But one thing you have to understand is the difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit. If you are in a board of a for-profit organization like General Motors or Verizon or something, you have a financial stake in its proceeding effectively. And if that isn't happening, if you have concerns about Verizon and you're on the board, you can do all sorts of things to make sure your stock stays valuable. Well, for a nonprofit, it's by its design 180 degrees opposite. The members of a board cannot have a financial stake. They cannot be employed. They cannot in any way have that kind of relationship, because they are supposed to be functioning kind of altruistically. And that's great, except the problem is it can change how the oversight model works. And so we in this county pay into Burt Nash and all of the other facilities, LMH, Heartland, all the nonprofits, several ways. One is their tax levies, which is part of what's on the ballot. And then there is also Medicaid, which we pay for both through federal monies and through the state. So these are mostly publicly funded. And the problem is what we've seen here recently, I guess not to my surprise, but I think I was a little bit taken aback, is we don't really have a very transparent experience of what's going on there. And for these entities to survive and be successful in the community, they need to work effectively with their own staff and effectively with their clients. Now, they certainly hold that they are doing that. I would have thought that was mostly true until a series of events recently, which are beginning to pop up in the media and raise some concerns about that. So we as a community have more of a vested interest in the success of this entity than we might have in a nonprofit that isn't directly connected to the central core of mental health in our community.
Absolutely. And you know, you kind of think of, like, you know, movies, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or whatever, and you think to yourself, it's really easy to not, as a community, not pay a whole lot of attention to what goes on in, you know, state-run institutions or nonprofits or whatever, until something happens, and then all of a sudden everybody jumps up and says, oh my goodness, how can we allow this?
A super big thing that happened is, in my career, I was involved in mental health reform in the late 90s, and what they did was close down some of those large facilities like Topeka State Hospital. Topeka State Hospital no longer exists, and I actually was involved in the final removal of teens from that hospital into the community. Well, the legislature did this thing called mental health reform, where they poured tons of money into the local mental health centers, and that was a monopoly. All the mental health centers in the association were the only ones who would get that contract. And then they bait and switched them over the years. They just took all that money back. So in fairness to any of the community mental health centers, and, you know, I think we all knew this was coming, but the money that was really supposed to be there has been little by little taken away. And at one point, the mental health centers sent back to the legislature, this might be 10 years ago, they said to the legislature, hey, if you're going to take all this money away, then we can't serve the indigent the way we have been. And the legislature finally said back to them, okay. And now you cannot go to a community mental health center and get as low cost of a service as you would get in days gone by when there was more subsidy available. You could go in at one point and get a service for $4 or $5 a session. That those days are over, and they are having to function more like, you know, for-profit entities, in the sense that they've got to collect, they've got to bill insurance, they've got to make sure they make the money they make in order to stay open, not just because they're sitting around, you know, money grubbing or something. They've got to have that to stay open.
Absolutely. Well, let's get a little more specific into what's going on at Burt Nash. As we mentioned, these seven specialized therapists put in their resignation. It actually happened a couple weeks ago. They're on the job until the 15th of August.
Right.
But the story broke only a few days ago. And since it happened, you were talking about transparency. There certainly has been a lack of it with regard to this particular issue, in terms of there's not exactly been any statements by anybody saying this is why we did this, or, you know, whether or not it was all seven of them pooling together and deciding to do it as a group in opposition to some policy or some event or some, you know, conditions that exist, and so on and so forth. And that information has just not become available so far.
So there's two schools of thought on this. The answer is, yeah, it was all done together. And the two schools of thought are that they did not reveal their intentions, and that is puzzling. The other school of thought is that they were not permitted to, or that they were intimidated into not revealing. So that's kind of what, when I got called by the paper, what I wanted to explain is informed consent. And this is really an important topic. I hope listeners who have any interest in mental health anywhere for any reason will take copious notes right now, because the core of a mental health intervention, or going and getting your gallbladder removed, or any medical procedure, is what's called informed consent. And I need to sit down and say, Joel, your gallbladder is very ugly. It needs to go. And you're like, isn't there something else we could do? And I say, you could take medicine, or you could have it removed. Here's the good side of taking medicine, and here's the good side of having it removed. Or I might say, no, you're going to die. And even then, you get to decide. because it's informed consent.
No, I don't get to decide. I'm going to die one way or another.
Well, okay.
Just a matter
of
when. That
is literally true. It is. So, but as you are learning about this procedure, you get to decide, and you have to have all the information necessary.
Yeah.
This is even more true in mental health procedures because there is a broad array of how to do that.
I also can get a second opinion, and
you can.
And I'm not limited to one particular doctor either, for that matter.
That's right. As a matter of informed consent, I should probably say to you, if you would like to ask another party, by all means, feel free to do that. That's a part of our informed consent form. Now, too often people hear this term informed consent and they think, oh no, it's a long document and I have to read it all and it's boring. Well, that might be true, but that's actually not what informed consent is. It's a process, and it starts when you meet the person and it keeps on going through the whole time you know them. So where I got concerned about this, and I have some experience with this, both as the hiring person, I have experience with this as the leaver, from a business. I have experience as the receiver and as the advisor to others. And it's all very clearly laid out. If you're an attorney, and, you know, God forbid you would be, just kidding, we love you attorneys, then this works differently. And I want to use that as an example first. So if you are in a practice and you are an associate and you get a bunch of clients and you decide, I'm going to go open my own practice, it is forbidden under your ethical code to take those clients. Now, if the clients show up at your door and you can't stop them from getting in, that's different. But you cannot solicit them and say, I'm going to my new practice, please come with me. That's forbidden in their ethical code because the clients belong to the practice, and your fiduciary obligation to that practice is to go about your business and leave the clients behind. They're all very careful about that. This is 180 degrees the opposite of how it is in therapy land. So the client relationship belongs to the therapist, the relationship that's been developed there, whether it's a prescriber or whatever. If you are a licensed professional, you owe to the client a duty that is higher than the agency. So when we have had this in the past, when I've hired three staff from Burt Nash, and each time, well, the first time we didn't have any problem. The person came, I think they brought two or three clients with them. Bringing clients isn't important to us at all. We want the person to leave ethically and to have a good feeling behind. The second time we got into quite a disagreement that they were instructing the therapist who now works for me that they couldn't tell them where they were going. Now, this is just a violation of informed consent. And once I mentioned this to the office at Burt Nash, they changed their tune. Because what you have to do is say, coming with me means that you may not be able to get medication from Burt Nash or something anymore. Or you may not have enough services in this practice. You need to remain here. Or it may mean this, if you don't go with me, you're going to have to start completely over. There is a big complaint amongst clients with Burt Nash that there's a lot of turnover. They have to start over again and again. So you have to weigh those two options, and the client then makes a decision. Well, none up until now, and I think that's changing today, I think it's changing very quickly, no one knew what was going on. Burt Nash says, we don't know where they're going, and they had not announced where they're going to go. And I think that's about to change. So clients who are already emotionally, struggling were in a limbo, thinking what's going to happen. And all Burt Nash could say is, well, we're going to get it covered. And if you know how many positions they have open right now to try to fill.
At least seven.
I think it's a lot more than that. I think it's like 10. So 10 or 12 something. So that is... rather than say, wow, this is going to be a struggle, they made it sound like, at one point they said this DBT thing, it's easy to learn and do. That just is, not true. It's quite a complex procedure.
All right. Well, we're going to have to take a break here for just a couple of minutes for the bottom of the hour Fox News. When we come back, I do want to get into a little bit about that, about what DBT is, and so people can understand that. But what you mentioned in terms of, changing therapists, just for people to sort of keep in mind, think about that. If you have been spending, months or years with a therapist, and how difficult it is to open up to these people, and then you have to go to a new one and start from scratch. Yeah, you might have a file that they can read, but there's nothing like you know, you giving your own story to a therapist. So
yep,
it's it's a lot to go through. Yeah. So, I mean, it certainly, like you said, this informed consent thing would seem to be a rather important part. So, all right, Radio for Grownups will continue here. We'll have Fox News bottom of the hour and a quick check of sports. And then back with Dr. Wes Crenshaw here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. Radio for Grownups, Joel Becker on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN, depend on it, 9:38 on a Tuesday morning with Dr. Wes Crenshaw this morning, talking about Bert Nash and the seven specialized therapists that decided to vamoose from Bert Nash and kind of the cloud of secrecy that has been going on around it that, as Dr. Wes said, may change very soon. But before we went to break, we were talking about, call them specialized therapists, and they specialize in a particular type of therapy we've been calling DBT or dialectical behavior therapy. And I thought maybe you might explain to people how Hegel is involved with any of this dialectical.
Well, you're not wrong. You may be a little too philosophical for some folks, but Hegel being the person, the philosopher who came up with dialectics, which you're closer than you think.
Hey, what do you know? It's taken 30 years, but my philosophy degree has now finally paid off.
You paid enough for it. So
Mom and Dad paid enough for it.
So the history of this, there's one Dr. Marsha Linehan, a psychologist who has, I believe, in Seattle. And she was tasked, I cannot remember what hospital it was, but she was tasked with working with one of the most difficult populations back at the beginning of this. There are people who are given a diagnostic category called borderline personality disorder. And these are the folks at the worst end of that spectrum are very brittle. They go to the hospital a lot. And the thing that they tend to do that's most difficult for therapists is threaten to or actually attempt suicide again and again and again. So Marsha was given this task of how to treat these folks. And there really was nothing very effective on the books. And so she began to develop a very unusual psychological approach that combined cognitive behavioral therapy with mindfulness meditation. Now, the cognitive behavioral therapy did not work without the mindfulness meditation because you have people who are so flooded with emotion. And by the way, it's worth noting that the number one criteria is fear of abandonment, fear of real or imagined abandonment. So these are folks who are just on edge all the time, and Marsha has to make a connection with them and do something other than tell them, think differently. So what she realized was, and it's funny, when I saw Marsha speak one time, and she's internationally known, she said, you know, if you knew me personally, you know I'm about the least meditative person you're ever going to meet. And she said, but I learned this is what works. And she began to adapt those two things together. Well, then they started doing research on it, hardcore research, and they found it was very effective for this population. The research has never broadened sufficiently to prove it empirically with other groups, but in general, for people who have trouble with emotional management, being able to make decisions in what they refer to in that treatment as wise mind, the dialectic comes between the rational mind and the emotional mind, and you're trained through meditation and through self-talk and through a whole long list of skills, very specific, this is what you do in this situation skills. So it's a very thought-based process. Then you can begin to make better decisions in the moment about how you choose to be. So that's the great side of DBT. And I've done, I think, 4 or 5 days of training on it, enough to know it is not really doable in my practice, because DBT, Marsha had been talking about using it more broadly, but DBT is really a programmatic solution. You need to have an integrated program for it to be effective in the way the research says it is. And that's a great idea, but it needs to be programized. So that's what Bert Nash has done for well over 20 years. For as long as I've been in practice in Lawrence, they've had a DBT program, and we have referred to it. My I believe, so you can imagine if people one day say, bye, we're leaving, that would be very upsetting to clients. I'd like to assure clients that I think everything's going to turn out okay. I do not know personally these seven people. I know them by reputation. I refer to them. I know one that's we speak on email periodically. And these are very, very conscientious people. I know there was some backlash pretty quickly that, you know, how could they do this to us? They've got it figured out. Well, they've got it figured out, and they're going to be around.
And I would say that anytime you hear a story like this, and especially when there are so many of them involved, because seven is not an insignificant number.
Oh, it's mostly the whole program. There are three more, and two of them were hired just recently.
Right. So if something like that happens, they did not come to this decision. I don't even know the names of any of these people, much less who they are or what they do. But I can tell you, just from having enough experience with stories like this, and especially with the healthcare field and the mental healthcare field as well, that they did not come to this decision lightly. And they would not have all decided to resign at the same time if there were not strong reasons for them to do so, and if they did not feel as if they had no other choice.
I believe that this was
the best choice for them, put it that way.
I believe that's true, and I think that what they do in their next career move, they will see as being giving them a greater freedom to practice in the way they think is most effective and safe and ethical for their clients. Now, I don't know that they're ever going to say the reasons that they felt impelled to do this and to do it the way they did it. But I do know, as conscientious providers, the relationships they've developed with the community and with those clients are not just going to wash down the Missouri River. That's the Kansas River out there.
Yes.
It's not the Missouri. I don't know. I've only lived here since 1988. You'd think I'd know that. But that's not going to just wash away. The minute I heard this, I thought they are doing something deliberative. Now, why there has been such a delay in just doing this, I do not know. I do not know whose idea that was. If that was the Seven's idea, I am surprised. If that was Burt Nash's idea to enjoin them from explaining what they were going to do, that's an error for their relationship to the community, their relationship to the clients, and the duty they have for transparency to those of us who are their supporters, of which I would count myself.
Well, when you have a group like Burt Nash, and they have therapists that are employees of theirs, I mean, most businesses, I've worked for a number of, whether it's radio stations or syndicators or so on and so forth, where I have had some sort of a limitation on my ability to leave and go somewhere else. There's a lot of competition in media markets, and if I were working for, you know, one station, they oftentimes would want to make sure that I don't go work for somebody else. In radio and media, television, whatever, there are some limitations as to how strongly enforceable those can be.
A lot of radio stories about that.
Yeah.
I can tell.
Well, it depends because, you know, it depends on whether you have an actual contract with the station or if it's just part of your employment agreement, because it makes a big difference in terms of whether or not they can enforce a non-compete type clause.
The most famous case in Kansas, KKRD versus Tim Peters.
Okay.
From 1985. Okay. See, I can cite case law.
There you go.
And it was upheld. The non-compete was upheld.
In general, across the country, it's been a bit of a coin toss. Sometimes they are and sometimes they aren't. And like I said, when you have a contract, they almost always are. When it's just part of an employment agreement, and unless it's a very direct competitor in a very close by area, you know, like, for example, people know that I used to be a traffic reporter over in Kansas City. And of course, there used to be two groups. There was the Johnny Rollins people, mm-hmm. and then there was the Metro Networks people. I worked for Metro. They eventually combined into one. But if while I was under some sort of a non-compete with Metro, I had gone to go work for Johnny, I would imagine they would have been able to enforce a non-compete clause with that. However, if I would have quit Metro and got a job, you know, as a disc jockey on another radio station, maybe even in Lawrence instead of Kansas City, for example, I think they would have had a hard time enforcing something like that because it's not a contract. It's just an employee handbook clause somewhere, and you're, you know, basically enjoining someone's livelihood. There's only so much you can do with that. But at any rate, when it comes to the Burt Nash and the mental health field, I assume that they, you were talking about, people being transparent and the disclosure and so on, but are they able to put limitations on therapists' ability to move around and so on?
So if my staff are listening, I want them to know that their no-compete contract is airtight. And as in all contracts, it's worth exactly how much money you're willing to spend in court to enforce it.
Sure.
And I'm willing to spend a lot. So the general contract.
But none of them want to go anywhere
because you're such a great boss,
right?
Because they love me.
Yes.
And can call in and say so if they want. No. So the Burt Nash's history, and I know this because we've hired some people, has been that they have current no-competes. So, and I will admit, from a business standpoint, I don't really quite understand the theory behind this. Why I have no-competes is very simple. I spend a lot of money and time and energy building the careers of the very best professionals I can find. And I think that's empirically true. I think this is one of the reasons we have the strong business we have is not just because I'm on the radio with you, which I know is very important, but it's because
90% of it.
Because we have very, very strong staff, and I spend long amounts of time hiring people. Then I'm going to spend a lot of time promoting their careers. And I do not want them to then leave and go take all the money I spent on them before I get a profit back and go and do their own thing. So everybody, that's just something that's kind of 101, how you develop people's careers. Burt Nash's model has been that as long as you're currently employed with them, you cannot compete. The reason that has always been puzzling to me, and I'm sure they have a logic behind it, is their salaries are not such that a person really is going to stay very long. And you can look this up. It's on Indeed all over the place right now. So if one could supplement that income with their own little private practice, other mental health centers in the state have found that to be a good way to retain staff. So instead, you're enjoined from working for anyone else in Douglas County while you're working for them. Then after you leave, you are free to move on. Now, I sure hope this doesn't teach Burt Nash how to write future no-compete clauses, because then they're going to really have a hard time recruiting, because most people don't want to come in and pledge themselves for $38,000 a year in perpetuity to their employer. Whereas in my situation, the remuneration is a little more worth it than that. So I hope they're not taking notes thinking, oh, let's have all the future contracts do a two-year no compete. But that will not be a problem for that I am aware of. That will not be a problem for the seven.
All right, well, we're gonna take another break here real quick, and when we come back, wanted to talk about the new mental health facility, or at least the proposed new mental health facility, as far as whether we need it, why we need it, whether it's worth the tax increase that it's going to cost us to get it, and it's going to be on the November ballot. So a little bit more when Radio for Grownups continues with Dr. Wes Crenshaw right here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. Keep it right here. More on the way.
You never know how much you can take till you try. Radio for Grownups will be back in a moment.
Radio for Grownups.
Radio for Grownups. Joel Becker on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. Dr. Wes Crenshaw joining us here in this 9 o'clock hour. Roger Steinbrock ahead in the 10 o'clock hour to talk Lawrence Parks and Recreation. But we are talking mental health this hour. And we've been talking about DBT and these the specialists, the therapists from Burt Nash that have all put in their notice. And you mentioned that they left, but it's not like they said goodbye and cleared out. They gave them 30 days notice,
right?
You
which
know,
is
so.
Appropriate. That's
absolutely
the requirement, really, in any contract.
Yeah, and I mean, but and like you said, I mean, there are patients involved here, so right. You don't want to, you know. I mean, there's people, but anyway, another thing that's been going on in Lawrence here recently is this mental health facility they would like to build that has that was on a ballot recently. It was in the mail-in election, but it was tied in together with an expansion of the jail in Douglas County, and that half-cent sales tax initiative failed back in May. So they want to put it on the ballot again in November. They haven't decided whether or not they're going to do it by sales tax, by mill levy increase, or some other form, but something is going to be on the ballot to raise about $5 million or so, plus a little bit extra for running the thing.
Yeah, and I am a big fan of this idea. We have gone an awful long time in a community that has grown. We're on pace to be bigger than Topeka at some point in the future. And so Lawrence needs to have some psychiatric crisis stabilization. Right now we have to farm all of this out to the cities. Boy, I could go on endlessly about problems of psychiatric hospitalization and what goes on there and what is done during discharge. I could just go on and on. And it would be much better if we could build towards having a stabilization here in Lawrence. I'm a big fan. I voted for the jail and the campus. I know that makes me unpopular in some circles, but I was so desperate to see mental health moved forward. I'll take the other thing. I am now kind of nervous about this. What I understand going on at Burt Nash right now, beyond just the seven, raises concerns for me that I think they owe us an obligation to clear up. And I don't just mean put up a web page that says how happy everybody is there. In previous situations, what I have seen to be helpful, and I am sure not offering to do this job, not a chance, is hire an external consultant, put $25,000, $30,000 into that, have them come in and sit down with existing staff and have a contract of confidentiality where you sit down and listen to what they have to say and then report back to the board what's going on. That would go a long way to get me back into being a big supporter of this project, because I know the infrastructure is there in terms of people to make it happen.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how this all plays out. Dr. Wes Crenshaw, as always, thanks. See you in a couple weeks. Dr.-west.com.
That's me.
All right. Fox News next. More Radio for Grownups coming up.
1320 KLWN Lawrence and new FM 101.7 K269 GP Lawrence. Depend on it.